Blog Talk Radio.
Whoops. Good morning and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. As we do each Saturday, we're going to start out letting Red Skelton introduce us with the pledge. We're going to have Rodney.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time. Anyhow, he had such wisdom, and we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day, and he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may, may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose, all divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life, without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation. And justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance. Under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Amen, Red Skelton. And I'm like you, Dan. I never hear that enough. Homeschooling this week, I started teaching the youngest the Pledge of Allegiance. And it was awesome to see her standing there next to her big sister. And she wasn't looking at the flag. She was watching her big sister. And, you know, it's so important because it's a part of our history. It's called patriotic pride in our country. And we have a lot of great things to look back over this country. There's been mistakes this country has made, just as any other mistake a country has made. However, And no country has ever done so much for good as this country has over the years, from our founding times up until now. The freedoms that we fought for, the men that have given their lives for that flag. And it's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome guest on this morning, somebody who's not just a guest anymore. He's become a friend and somebody that I have a lot of high respect for. Rodney Lee Conover is running for Congress in California's 8th District. It's the second largest district in the country. In fact, the race is more along the size of a medium-sized state's Senate candidacy. And I like Rodney because Rodney's solid on the issues. He's solid on some very conservative issues, and he states his position very, very well. But I know a lot of people who are solid on the issues. I'm solid on the issues, and I'd make a crappy candidate. I'll tell you that right now. What I'm impressed about with Rodney is the fact that he's solid in his core. He's solid where he stands. You're not going to push him over. He's going to stand up for what he believes for. He's willing to debate you. He's willing to tell you, no, I this is the way I feel. And, you know, that's what it takes. That's what it takes, folks, in Congress, is we need people that are going to stand up and fight for what's right and not follow the money and not play politics and not run around and moves and smooths with the important people just to be fun. Ronnie's willing to go to Washington, D.C. and fight for what's right. He's willing to fight the big issues, Common Core. He's willing to fight the big issues, Obamacare. But he wants to fight them right. He doesn't want to waste time on things that we would normally waste time for. Ronnie's like I am. Let's get rid of that current 80,000-page tax code. However, he wants to do it right. He doesn't want us to waste our time. And that's what's important to me, and anybody that listens to this show knows that's what's important to Dan, too. You know, the theme of this show is been there and done that. And we've had a lot of great guests on this show who have been there and done that, and Rodney's one of them also. Not only is a great candidate, he's got a great background and a great past. In fact, I'm a firm believer that Rodney in his past and some of the things that he's done have well prepared him to not only win this race, to not only get the message out, but to make a fine, fine congressman. And so we're looking forward to that. Dan, I'm going to pass it to you for your quick opening remarks as well, and then we will, with no further ado right after that, introduce Rodney Lee Conover.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I agree. Rodney has a wonderful, wonderful background, and I've had a chance to get to know him over the last few months, and I think he can be a wonderful contribution to our nation, and we're behind you, Rodney, 100%, and looking forward to talking to you a little bit more about your past and, you know, bringing us up to the future and what you see coming on and over the next four years. And with that, I'm going to pass it back over to Scott.
All right, and we're going to introduce Rodney this way. You know, I love life because each week in life we learn something new, and I learned a couple of new things about Rodney last week. I learned, number one, something really huge to me right now. Rodney's a Texan. Rodney graduated from the University of Texas at Austin. He's got ties here, and he's got a Texas attitude. He's a rancher. He knows how to ride a horse. That's important to me because I'm a firm believer that that gives some character traits that you can't get anywhere else. Rodney's been a talk show host. Rodney's written for some people that I respect highly. Dan, you and I were hugely on the Kane train. He's written for Mr. Kane, written for Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, Joe the Plumber, a great, great guy. And Rodney's just done a lot of fun things in life as well. Rodney's funny. He's a comedian. You know, and that's important to me because, you know, sometimes life gets pretty serious, and sometimes you got to laugh about things. We continued my ladies' Bible class yesterday, and, you know, I'm reading that Old Testament, and sometimes it's serious, but sometimes, you know, it's funny, And we've got to find the fun things in life as well. Rodney's been a comedian and many other things. So with no further ado, Rodney, I want to bring in, welcome to Contending for Truth Radio again, and of course, our Saturday Symposium show with Dan Wilson this morning. I want to just start out, just give us a brief outline of who you are, what you've done, and then we'll jump into the campaign and how it's going and so on and so forth. Rodney.
Well, that's our show, everyone. Good day, everybody. See you next time. Now, I was just sitting here enjoying that introduction, man. You guys are great. You should follow me around. That's awesome.
I wish I could.
You guys are just great. There's no way I could have said all that better myself. I really appreciate you guys, and Scott and Dan are my supermen online, and I talk to them every day, it seems like, and I tell you, you know, you just can't have enough help running for office. It's something you can't do alone. It's impossible. You got to literally have an army of people behind you and supporting you and pushing you and talking you up, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate the support. I am running in the 8th District in California. As Scott said, geographically speaking, it takes up most of the southeast portion of California, which you know is a giant state, and it goes from basically, if you know where Palm Springs is, just north of Palm Springs, all the way up the Nevada border. There's the dogs next door are going nuts here next to headquarters. I don't know if you can hear them. All the way up past Needles, all the way up to Mammoth Lakes, back down to the ski areas of Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead, and over where I live in Hesperia and Victorville and 29 Palms, where the big marine base is. And it's just huge. And so you need literally an army of people to help you run and help you get the word out. And it's not... This is not a district where you necessarily use a lot of television and cable where you normally would, say, in Los Angeles or Houston or markets where the people are concentrated. You got to get in your car and get on your feet and get out there. And I've been doing a lot of that, and, of course, these shows that we're like we're doing today and online, and it's really important. So I appreciate you guys. As you said, I've had a long career in the entertainment side of politics. First job I ever had was writing for Rush Limbaugh 25 years ago for about 6 years. And then I was a conservative comic. I was very lucky. Got to travel all over the world entertaining people and troops. The first USO show I did, I think, was in 1989 or 90 or something, and was very fortunate. I got to do a lot of things that are very unique experiences. I was inspired to get into politics by Oliver North when I saw him testify in the Iran-Contra hearings back in the late 80s. I was just fascinated. He raised his hand in Congress, remember, to testify, and he said he was going to tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly, and he did. And he, in a sense, he just told them to stick it. And I just wanted to be him. And I just wanted to tell truth to power. And he did. And they did their best to tear him up and rip him apart, and they couldn't. They just couldn't, because he was just telling it like it is. And then I would watch the CBS News every night after the hearings, and I would watch how CBS would cover the hearings and how they would just – it was just blatant lying about what had happened. And for the people that couldn't watch those hearings, they were getting a report about those hearings that was not true. It was – blatantly false what they were hearing from Dan Rather. And I grew up watching Dan Rather and just thinking, well, he's telling us the news. And my eyes were opened. And I was shocked. And I was really young at the time. And I just was looking and I was going, well, that must just have been a fluke. And as the hearings went on and as the evenings rolled by, I realized these guys are against us. They're trying to tell the public something differently than what is actually happening. They're lying to us. They're not just skewing things. They're not just kind of tweaking the news. They're not just bending the truth. They are flat out lying to the public. And I was just, I lost my innocence. And I decided right then and there that I was going to commit a portion of my life to get the word out that something is very, very wrong. And we need to educate the public that there is a large swath of people that are up to no good. And it's, as you know, it's done nothing but get worse since then. Now, we've also gotten talk radio, we've also gotten the internet, and we've gotten a lot of our own tools to combat that. Back then, there was very few options. And that's when I was introduced to Rush Limbaugh, and I was fortunate enough to start writing for him. And perhaps my second or third most proud moment was 1994 when the giant sweep of political power shifted from the Democrat Party over to the Republican Party. And I felt like there was some real conservatives in the Republican Party. You'll remember Newt Gingrich and the Contract with America. That was the first time that I personally experienced the phenomenon of knowing we were winning because of the intensity of the hate that was coming our way. That was the first time I experienced that, because I was very closely involved working with Rush Limbaugh. By virtue of that, I was closely involved in that movement, the Contract with America. Even though it was indirectly, I was still very close to it. I knew we were going to wipe the floor with those Democrats. Now, the media did not know that we were going to win so many seats in the House of Representatives. I mean, it was incredible. It was nothing short of insane what happened. I mean, a guy like Dan Rostenkowski lost his seat in Chicago. Do you know how bad you have to win in a district like that in order to actually win? I mean, the shenanigans that goes on in that state, you have to win 99-1 in order to actually win 51-49. You know what I'm saying? And a guy came out of nowhere and beat Dan Rostenkowski, who is one of the most powerful men in the country. This is how bad people wanted Democrats out of office. And I knew, because I could tell just from the intensity of the hatred that was being lobbed at the Contract with America and Newt Gingrich, I could just tell how scared they were. And sure enough, the election of 1994, I was sitting in a room with a bunch of liberals because I lived in Hollywood. I lived in Hollywood at the time. And, man, I've never seen in my life a more shell-shocked group of people. And I had the biggest grin on my face. And, of course, I was in the closet. I was a closeted Republican. And I just sat there and I thought to myself, boy, if these people knew I was writing for Rush Limbaugh, they'd have slipped my throat. And it was the greatest thing. And I moved on to being a comic and going all over the world. And as I said, entertaining people and just having the time of my life. I was just so lucky. I was the luckiest guy on earth. And I made a bunch of bad television shows. I traveled through the Middle East. You know, I made television shows about, you know, reconstructing the journey of the gift of the Magi and the three wise men and, you know, just these awesome opportunities that I just wish everybody could do. But it was great. And I went on to produce radio and had my own co-hosting my own talk show on Sirius XM for 9 years. And as you said, I was able to retire from show business in 2008. I went on to write for Herman Cain, the great Herman Cain. As you said, Joe the Plumber, Joe Wurzelbacher, my buddy. And I decided to run for Congress when the congressman from my district, District 8 in California, just turned his back on the people of this district by voting to fund Obamacare, voting to raise taxes, raise spending, obliterate the debt ceiling, and now cut the pensions of our finest Americans, our military veterans. Now, I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea, and I'm very careful about this because the man who currently holds this office, Congressman Paul Cook from District 8 in California, is himself a veteran and a fine man and a good man. And I've spent a good portion of my adult life supporting veterans. And if anyone in this race or in the media or anywhere else for that matter were to ever attack him personally, they would have me to deal with. And Paul Cook's a gentleman. He would not return fire in kind. But I would. And I would be on his side, and I'd have his back if he were attacked personally. Because this isn't personal. This is a difference on his voting record. And it is a large difference. I am very upset about his voting record. And he's a Republican. And Scott, Dan, everybody, I, like you, am so incensed that these Republicans who we worked our backsides off in 2010, we got out there for most of us for no money. Certainly I didn't make any money. In a true grassroots fashion, we walked the streets and the hills and the sidewalks of this nation, and we busted it for these Republicans, and we swept them into power, and we took back the House of Representatives, and what did we get? What did we get? We got higher taxes. We got bigger deficits. We got cuts in military pensions? What? We got Obamacare? No, we did this in 2009 to stop Obamacare. Then why do we still have Obamacare? And that's why I'm running, guys. I'm running for what we did in 2010. This is a continuation. This is a correction. Because apparently we didn't get the right people in there. Now, there are some that are working out great. The great Senator Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Louie Gohmert, there's many more. And I'm going to join them. And we're going to defund Obamacare. We're going to uproot it. We're going to rip out what's left of it. We're going to start over. And we're going to install a market-based health care system. And you'll be able to purchase a health care plan from any state that's market-based, competitive, one that where you can keep your doctor and your health plan if you like it. In other words, everything President Obama lied to you about. We're going to restore the promises we made to our military veterans and their pensions. When we're going to cut government, we're not going to mess around with these silly reductions in growth that means nothing. We're not going to pass $1.1 trillion deficit budgets. This is ridiculous. But the idea that just because you have an R next to your name means you're right for office, it just doesn't fly anymore, guys. And we all know it. And that's why I'm running.
You know, exactly. And I'm glad you brought up your USO work, because I was going to mention that as well. You know, Rodney, the purpose of my shows is always to encourage our listeners to help. Because you said a mouthful a while ago, it takes a team. It's not something that one can do by themselves. And it's not something that somebody can pay a bunch of people to do. Herman Cain made it to Florida CPAC, and he made his name recognition by using the grassroots. And we're working on that, so I want to take this time first, before we go any further, to encourage every one of our listeners, if you can help anyway. There's two different types of people that can help. I'm here in Texas. I can't get out, man. Rodney, you know, I'd be out on the street with you every day at your side working and encouraging and everything else if I could, but I can't do that from Texas. But I can get online, and I can post on Facebook. I can talk to people on Facebook, on Twitter. I can. There's all kinds of things I can do from here, and we need those kinds of people. We need people all across the country that can help. We also need a gang of people in California 08, which, like you said, man, that district starts way down in Palm Springs and goes actually not too far, just over the Sierra Nevadas from where I used to live in Springville, California. It's a lot of work. If you're in Ridgecrest, if you're in Palm Springs, or if you're anywhere in between, and you can help Rodney, get in contact with him. Say, I'm willing to spend a little bit of time. It's worth it, folks. Go to Rodney's website, Conover for Congress. That's Conover with an F-O-R, congress.com. Go to his Facebook page. You can search RLC4, Common Sense. Go to his Twitter. He's RCCAO8. If you can do nothing but help tweet, help us tweet. If you can do nothing but post Facebook, do that. If you're on the ground there and you can put yard signs out, if you can get on the phone and call some people for Rodney, maybe you've got some great connections in California OA to people that need to know about Rodney. Get on the phone and help us spread the word. It's a multifaceted effort with so many things. You know, Rodney, you and I talked the other day, trying to come up in my mind with all the things that the grassroots help can help do. There's so many things it's hard to do. But, you know, that's what this is all about.
Our first campaign slogan, we ended up changing this, but our first campaign slogan, I'm not Anthony Weiner, tested through the roof. But I think we ended up taking something else, did we not?
Yes.
You know, I spent all last summer trying to get anyone who would listen, but primarily my current representative, Paul Cook, I tried to get them to listen about defunding Obamacare, because it was just so important to stop this thing before it started. And it was personal for me, because I had the same doctor for 9 years, and along comes Obamacare, and boom, he's gone. Same with my insurance. You know how I found out? I got a letter from my insurance company saying that as of October 1st, I would no longer like my plan. Isn't that weird? Now, you know, I'm in the state exchange. Isn't that strange that they would name it that, the state exchange? It even sounds onerous, doesn't it? The state exchange. Have any of you been to your state exchange or tried to get on this website or, you know, experienced any of Obamacare?
Sure haven't.
Because it's like being in line at the DMV, only now you're in one of those hospital gowns with the it's open in the back with your butt hanging out, you know. It is everything you're thinking about. But, you know, I used to say, you know, I'm running for Congress for many reasons, but here's the main one. I want to be exempt from Obamacare. But that's the most, I don't even have a word for it, but that is the most shocking thing to me about Obamacare, is that Congress exempted themselves from it. That is all the proof you need about how horrible this legislation is. Because if it was any good, why on earth would they exempt themselves from it? And they talk about, well, when is Obama going to sign up for Obamacare? Do you know that it's illegal for him to sign up for Obamacare? Part of Obamacare legislation, there's a part of that law that states very specifically, if your employer offers you health care, not only are you not eligible for Obamacare, but it is against the law for you to get Obamacare or sign up for it. So if President Obama goes ahead and signs up for Obamacare, he's breaking his own law. It is so, like I said, Scott, you'll attest to this, very, very rare for me to be at a loss for words, but I am on this. There's just, you have to step back and come to the conclusion eventually that this was never about healthcare. This was never about insurance. This was never about getting everybody covered. Oh, well, gee, at the end of the day, everyone's going to have insurance. No, they're not. No, they're not. Even by their own admission, everyone will not be covered. Well, wait a minute. What about Rodney Lee? What about people with pre-existing conditions? You know how many people with pre-existing conditions were turned down by the private health insurance industry over the last 5 years? Less than 1%. We are tearing apart what most people consider the greatest healthcare industry in the world. We are completely destroying that industry for the sake of less than 1%. We are completely ripping apart everyone's, most say somewhere between 85 and 90% people are happy with what they had. But let's just say 80%. For the sake of 20%, we're ripping up 80%. And for what? For this? For a website that doesn't work, for a system that even the people who designed it say won't cover everyone anyway, for a system that takes 57% of it will be paid for eventually by Medicare, most of the people, the lion's share of people who have gone to, who went ahead and got insurance through this plan, through this legislation, just signed up for Medicare. Well, I ask you guys, if that was the plan, why blow up the system? Why didn't we just say, hey, people with pre-existing conditions, people who cannot, for whatever reason, get insurance, put them on Medicare? In other words, what are you missing with people who are happy with what they have? Step back and come to the conclusion that I have, that this is not about health care, it's not about insurance, and it's not about covering people. It never was. Let me ask you guys, did it ever occur to you at some point, did you ever ask yourself, did you ever shake your head and go, why isn't President Obama and the people around him, why aren't they more upset that this website didn't work? Why aren't they more upset about it? Well, that was somewhat rhetorical, because my answer is, because they don't care that it didn't work. because it was designed to not work. They don't have problems with expertise and websites, okay? They are experts with websites. They never had a problem getting donations on websites or ground games and websites or grassroots organizing and websites. These guys are the kings of websites, all right? If they wanted to build a website that worked, they can do it. So they took $500 million, they sent it to a Canadian company who they knew had no who they had no business trying to build a website, who had a track record of not being able to build correct websites, who employed the son-in-law, or was it the son-in-law or the daughter-in-law or somebody of Valerie Jarrett? That's what happened.
Well, and
it
you know
never,
what, Ron?
That goes never to the designed to work.
To more of it, I think. I think most of it is designed to not worry about working. I think Common Core is exactly along the same lines. They use the excuse to take care of little Johnny, who lives in Washington, and he moves to Texas to make sure that he doesn't end up in a totally different curriculum. Well, that's a bunch of malarkey, because I worked for World Book Encyclopedia 20 years ago. We had a 12-page guide that gave the common curriculum across the United States of what you learned in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. We've already had a common core curriculum. In the 5th grade, you learn states and capitals. In the 8th grade, you learn Constitution. Basically, it's there. But they've used that excuse to rip up the whole system and redo it, and they didn't care if it doesn't work. They didn't care if teachers and administrators all over the country said this is insane. They didn't care if kids at a certain level of learning can't understand or comprehend certain subjects. And I think that's their pattern all the way through. And it's a pattern of lies. You know, I'll say this, and then I'll throw it back over to Dan to throw his input in on this. But while you were watching Oliver North doing that, I'll tell you what I was watching. I was watching Ronald Reagan do that, and my first experience with understanding the media was with Sam Donaldson. And I would sit during the 80s as a kid, and I would watch what Ronald Reagan got up and told the American people, and then I would turn around and watch afterwards as Sam Donaldson would turn around and repeat what Ronald Reagan said. And as a kid, as a high school and junior high student, I could look at it and go, wait a minute, that is not what the man said. And so it's a foundational lies, and it's a ends justify the means mentality. And if that means lying to get our way, that's great. And that's what's insane about all this. You know, Dan, you and I both are firm on character of the people that we support. And another thing that Rodney said a while ago that is so important to me is don't attack my opponent. You know, we can attack the opponent on the issues, but personal attacks are nuts. And one of the reasons why is, Dan, you and I were on that cane train, and you and along with Rodney, Rodney was on that cane train very, very well. And we got to a point a Saturday that summer when we had to turn around and pick another candidate. And we had watched that primary, those people attack and attack and attack each other. Everybody else's candidate was conservative. Everybody else's candidate, or their candidate was conservative and everybody else's wasn't. And then when it came time to really get behind one candidate, we had nothing. In June of this next year, we're going to either have to get behind Rodney Conover, or we're going to have to get behind his opponent. And so, you know, that's huge to me. So I want to say that and then throw it over to Dan in Florida. Dan.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I go back a little further. I go back to the Nixon days and the field day that they had over him. Again, it was what they did is they took half-truths and blew them way out of proportion. I mean, by today's standards, considering what Obama has done, what Nixon did was petty. And that's when I had my awakening. And I remember I was, in seventh grade, and I was having an argument with my teacher about it because I was discussing, you know, his foreign affairs policies and a lot of the positive things that Nixon actually did. And do I condone Watergate? No. But you know something, in retrospect, in the scheme of things, it was right reasonably small. But the press blew it totally out of proportion. And they blamed him of, you know, Vietnam, when anybody of our age group knows that it was LBJ who got us really into Vietnam and not Nixon. It was actually Nixon who got us out of Vietnam. And then as I grew and I continued to start watching the press and compared to what was being actually said, you could see that, you know, the press was so far to the left and supporting the left that it was ridiculous. I mean, look at what they did during the, you know, the Carter administration. They covered for him so much. And when he totally made a mess of everything, and finally when Reagan started coming along, they tried to rip him apart. But thank God, you know, the people had enough of what took place during the Carter years that they awakened and, you know, voted for Reagan. And Reagan, you know, he wasn't perfect. Nobody was perfect. He was, he could have done more on downsizing the federal government, and NAFTA, you know, was not his ideals with free trade between nations was not perfect. But you know something, he got our economy back up and running. He hired some brilliant people within his cabinet, not people who were there for favors. He brought in people like Hart and Laffer, who is a brilliant economist. And Laffer was the one who really let us out of the problems. And, you know, I looked at the Republican Party, and the Republican Party up through the Reagan years was really, I mean, they were furious of, you know, after the Carter years. And the problem was is that during the Reagan administration, they were so successful, and Bush 1 carried on role, continued the positive growth in our economy, that we became complacent, and we did not really stand up during the Clinton years and, you know, the three acts, the Fair Housing Act that came out of the Carter years. Clinton took and just expanded on that. And then he took the SEC and changed the percentages of subprime loans that a bank could handle, and then he brought in Barney Frank to run Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And if we want to point a direct finger at what happened with the housing crisis, we can go there. But again, during the Clinton years, the economy was so strong that we as Republicans had become so complacent that we thought that this was the way things were going to stay. And we allowed, we brought the House back over to our side, and we had Gingrich, who was a brilliant speaker, and, you know, the only speaker that I'm aware of that managed to balance the budget in two consecutive terms. And, you know, we thought everything was great. But in the background, on the left, were people conspiring against them. And Pelosi and Dole both got together and created that scandal, of which that which took them down, but was 100% a lie, with the exception of the him cheating on his wife. Everything else was a total lie, and he was acquitted on all charges. But we took down a person who potentially could have been a great leader. And I am still for him. I'm not sure if you read the post I put on the yesterday afternoon, Rodney, but it was on Gingrich and what took place. And to this day, there are still people out there who are still throwing stones at him. And out of a fallacy that was created by two people, two evil people, and they pressed that, wanted to get behind it. And, it infuriated me. And then, we come up with the Republican Party finally started waking up in 08 and said, it's time to change. And I agree, we won the House flat over, but we had not realized how far the cancer had spread, and to the point where, half of Congress on the GOP side had adapted into the left way of thinking. And
absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I mean, now to the point where, we look over the last 6 years, what has Congress done? I mean, we have Solyndra, we have Fast and Furious, we have Benghazi, we have the IRS, and the list goes on and on. And what has Congress done? Zero. Why? Because what happened is we created, from the end of the Reagan years to present, we created a group of monsters. And I hate to say it, it's time to start from scratch, get rid of, it's time for a spring cleaning, and we need to get rid of people, get rid of the rhinos and get rid of these people who are not willing to stand up. Nobody really in Congress has really gone head-to-head with Obama and said enough is enough. And the result is our First Amendment has been sorely damaged. Our Second Amendment has been practically shredded. Thank God they haven't attacked the Third Amendment yet. The Fourth Amendment is all but gone. The Fifth Amendment is almost all but gone. The Tenth Amendment is in the same boat. And where Congress is allowing this to happen. And Congress does have the power to change that. And it's time to say enough is enough. And, we worked our tails off in the grassroots movement during the Kane administration. And and we got nothing out of it. And that infuriates me. And it's time to set the record straight. And I know, Rodney, the size of your district, because I did a lot of four-wheeling up in Joshua Tree, and I used to go from Pioneer Town up to Big Bear and over to Lone Pine or out to Death Valley after the Hector Mine fault quake. Remember driving down a trail and then seeing a divide and saying, well, wait a minute, the trail's over here now. That was pretty interesting. And so I know that really word of mouth is very, very important up in your district because people out in that area are not big in the internet and, you know, TV. So word of mouth is very, very important. And, you know, I'm glad you finally you stepped up and, you know, were willing to take on the task. I am one of the people you were talking about earlier who had a pre-existing condition in 2000 and a heart attack and triple bypass. And for 10, for 8 years, I lived and, you know, everything was fine. You know, the companies I worked for, I had some of the best care one could ask for. I had my surgery at the Heart Institute of the Desert in Eisenhower Medical Center. It was, everything was great. I had a wonderful cardiologist. And I moved over here to the East Coast. And my next job, again, I had everything going great until the economy crashed. And then after my COBRA ran out, my rates went up to $1,700 a month. And I blame that mostly on litigation. But, you know, for the work people, you know, who's in the working class, you couldn't ask for more. And then, you know, Obama comes in and starts tearing everything to shreds. And, you know, I said before he was elected, I said he was the Antichrist, and he had proven me right ever since. You know, and I'd love to, that's why I'm supporting you, you know, so strongly, because we need people like you who are going to stand up against these rhinos and, you know, say enough is enough.
Well, insofar as the history of the Republican Party in the last 30 years, it is difficult, very difficult, when it comes to the subject of, and I've come up against some really, really difficult, the most difficult thing about this candidacy, about this campaign, is when people say to me, well, why are you running against a Republican? Because it is a long, drawn-out explanation. And so you have to distill it down to this. Look, the guy's not voting correctly. It's just, I don't want to spend 20 minutes telling every single person, look, before Barack Obama came along, the most profligate spenders in the history of the United States were the Republicans. George W. Bush and the Republican Senate and the Republican House of Representatives in 2000,
through 2006, the 6 years that the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that wasn't that long ago. It was 8 years ago, and they controlled, we, Republicans, controlled the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. I hear John Boehner saying all the time, he looks right in the camera and he says, folks, if we just, we're only one half of one third of government, we can't get anything done. If we only controlled the Senate, if we only controlled the White House and the House, we could get this stuff done. Well, Speaker Boehner, we had it all in 2000 through 2006. We had the House, we had the Senate, and we had the White House. And you know what we did? We spent more money. We grew more deficits and more debt than any Congress in the history of the Republic. That's what we did.
Exactly.
And until Barack Obama came along, we were the most profligate, drunken sailors in the history of this country. That's what we did. So don't give me this crap that all you got to do is take back the Senate and the White House and you're going to straighten stuff out. Because I got news for you. No, you're not. How do I know that? Because I worked my tail off to get that done once. And there's an old saying, fool me once. You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to shame on me. I'm not going there. It's shame on you, and that's as far as I go, shame on you. No more. Now, in 2010, we gave you the House, and we gave you specific instructions, and it was stop Obamacare. Defund Obamacare. And the Republicans said, no problem. We're going to stop Obamacare. We're going to cut spending. We are going to stop this train wreck called Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Barack Obama. The founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution specifically, the more you learn about the Constitution, and, you know, maybe I'm old or something. I don't know. I don't feel old, but I guess I am, because I had to take civics courses, and I had to pass a civics test to get into high school. I hated it. I mean, I despised having to do that. It bored me. I didn't like it. I got by on the skin of my teeth. I did get to high school. I want to make that clear. But, man, that was tough. It was rigorous. I didn't like doing it. I didn't understand why we had to do it. At the time, I didn't understand. I now understand that kids don't have to do any of that, and it shows. But you used to have to learn about the Constitution, and now I know why. Because these guys were Nostradamus-like when they wrote the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. They had a crystal ball, and they looked into the crystal ball, and you know what they saw? They saw the election of Barack Obama, and they saw us, and they said, huh, dear people of the future, Barack Obama will one day get elected. People of the future. Article 1. The House of Representatives has the power of the purse, and should laws that are not in favor by the majority of the people, legislation that is passed over the will of the people by an onerous and powerful central federal government, shall the House of Representatives shall have the power to defund those laws and still fund the rest of the government. It's in Article 1. Not just the power to do so, but the duty of the House of Representatives. It's upon their shoulders to protect the people in that way, to protect the people from the centralized government. It's in the Constitution. They looked ahead and they saw this coming. Why did they do that? Because they just fought a damn war over it. They didn't know they were going to win the Revolutionary War. That was a million to one shot. It was lottery-like odds that they would win the Revolutionary War, and it was damn close on a dozen occasions that they were by the skin of their teeth. General Washington was beaten 10 times. He was beaten. And they came back from the dead to win that war. And so they wrote it into the Constitution. Look, if you ever get close to being taken over, here's what you do. And we put these guys in power in 2010, and they abdicate. What's that word? Abdicate?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it. Sons of guns. Man. Boy, you just get me worked up. And now we got 2014 coming up. Isn't it great that they also had the foresight to make the House of Representatives a two-year term? You know why they did that? Read the Federalist Papers. It's right there. I think Jefferson wrote it. Maybe it was one of the other. Anyway, it's in there. They made the House of Representatives elections two-year terms because they called it the People's House. The House of Representatives called it the People's House because it was right after Article 1. They wrote Article 1, and then they decided to make it a two-year term because just in case the people that you have in the House of Representatives didn't follow Article 1, you could get rid of them and get new guys in there to follow Article 1. It's brilliant. And how great it is and how appropriate it is to today's world. We didn't like Obamacare. A grassroots organization, the Tea Party, sprung up. We got off the couch. We stopped the barbecue. We turned off the TV. We got out in the street. We elected a bunch of people that said they would get rid of Obamacare. They didn't do it as per Article 1. And now we got 2014. Schmell you later, boys. We're putting some new people in, just like the framers of the Constitution designed it. It's brilliant. So, what's my point? My point is this. There's a lot of doom and gloom going on, okay? Even on this show, it's not hard to be doomy and gloomy. I'm guilty of it myself. Dan, you're guilty. Scott, you're guilty. Scott's probably the least guilty. Scott is my man. He's my guy. Because he's so optimistic, man. I really love Scott for that. Dan, you're optimistic too, I know. But Dan's a little bit more like me. We're curmudgeon-y, you know. We're all mad. We just want to tear somebody's head off. But we got to remember that, and I know you're like this too, Dan. At the end of the day, we're very optimistic. Why? Because we got this Constitution. And we got this vote. And we got people like everybody that's on this show and everybody listening. And man, this is a wake-up call. This Barack Obama, he's not the end of the world. He's the beginning of the world. He's our guy, really. He's the guy that's going to help us. I know that sounds crazy, but it's not. He's the guy that saves us in the end. And this is the springboard. This is what Uncle Rodney calls the springboard. And let me back up a little bit. If you talk to business people who are really business people, and they maybe don't even have personalities. They're just business. They're all business. They don't even play racquetball. They don't do nothing. They will tell you, the first thing they'll tell you is recession is good. Say, well, man, it's a big recession.
they smile, man. They go, you know what? Recession is not only good, it's necessary. You got to have recession. It's what business thrives on. Recession is what makes business strong. Why? Because a recession forces a business owner to make the tough decisions that he should have been making all along. It forces you to reassess your product line. It forces you to reassess your employment. It forces you to make all those tough decisions that you should have been making every day anyway. And when your business is good, you get lazy. You start hiring people that you're like, ah, yeah, bring them on, you know, whatever. You start getting lazy in every decision you make when times are good. But when times are tough, you whittle that business down to a lean, mean fighting machine. And that's what recession does to you. And when recession's over, your business is like a sharp knife, and you cut through life like butter. And that's what recession does to business. And the businesses that shouldn't have been there anyway, they drop off. And new businesses spring up, and they hire people, and demand for good employees sets in, and wages go up, and the economy, you know, naturally goes up and down. But the overall projection is up, and a country gets strong. So recession, every once in a while, it's necessary. That's what business people will tell you, and they're right. Well, depression is not good. But every once in a while, you get a depression. And it's always because of tomfoolery. And it's always because of shenanigans. And that's what happened with our last depression. And that's what happened with this one.
Mm-hmm.
But when we come out of this one, we are going to come out of this one. It's going to blow this entire world's mind, because we're going to have this gigantic Tea Party movement. We are going to have, for the most part, we're going to have the correct people in office, and we are going to have an economy that is going to go nuts. Do you know how many people are sitting on their money and are chomping on the bit to start a new business? They're just sitting there waiting for the right environment, for the right conditions. I know a ton of them myself that just refuse to start new businesses with Barack Obama in office or with the Democrats in the Senate. They're like, I'm not going to start it. I'm waiting. I'm just sitting on my cash. And, baby, when it happens, we're going to go gangbusters, and it's going to happen. I am very, very optimistic, guys, because we're going to get this done. We really are. And a lot of times I'm full of doom and gloom because I'm very devoted to this cause. And you got to point out what's going wrong. You just have to. You got to educate people, and you got to do your best, because people don't have time to study these issues, and you know, they're busy with their families, and they're busy with their businesses, and they got two or three jobs, or maybe they're looking for work or whatever they're doing. They don't have time to sit around on the internet and study all the issues. Well, that's what we do for a living. So we got the time. So we got to point it out. And it sounds doom and gloom, but I don't know about you guys. Well, I do know about you guys. But I'm very optimistic. And we're going to spring out of this, and we're going to be kicking some behind. Don't you think?
Oh, I agree. and, you know, the big reason I do is when our forefathers saw that the Constitution needed to be spelled out, they put in Hamilton and Madison to write out the Federalist Papers. And they went through each article, each section of our Constitution, and spelled it out. Because they knew that had we not done that there would be people in the future that were going to exploit it, as they are doing now. And so our forefathers, I always say that the Constitution was divinely created, because it had to have divine intervention because of the foresight they had. You know, Washington, when he put together the two people who was going to write the Constitution, what did he do? He took the two polar opposites. He took Jefferson and Adams, two people who politically hated each other. And he said, get together, lock yourself in a room, and come up with our Constitution. And what they did was incredible. And later on, what is really ironic is in 1822, on the 50th anniversary of our nation, Jefferson and Adams died within 2 hours of each other. And if that doesn't say divine intervention, I don't know what does. And Madison had become a great president during 1812, and he stood his ground. And, you know, right from the very beginning, our nation had some major problems to overcome. But we had these brilliant people in office. And these people, you know, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, 80% of them lost everything. They don't realize how many sacrifices were made in the creation of this nation. And yet they came out and they created a foundation that the world had never seen. And it grew. And we rectified our mistakes. We've always seemed to have the right person in office at the right time. Lincoln, you know, his whole thing was the preservation of the Union. And he managed to keep the Union together, as well as end the slavery issue that had gone on for the past, the previous 80 years. And after that, we went into the Industrial Revolution, where we saw the expansion. And we did have a recession, a depression in 1921, just after the First World War. But we had a party that allowed the economy to repair itself. And nobody knows about that. But in 29, the Depression that hit, FDR got his paws into it and created a total mess. And the Great Depression is 100% the government's fault. And then post-World War II, we came out with an optimistic point of view, very patriotic point of view as well, and were able to expand and to create the nation that you and I would know today. So, you know, I do have a lot of positive outlooks, and I'm looking at Obama as a wake-up call. And Obama's a person that finally, just like Carter did, Obama's a person who's going to wake us up and say, it's time to move, but we've learned from our mistakes, and now we know to create a grassroots movement of people who are true patriots and not politicians. And this is why I'm so optimistic about the future. And, Scott, I'll pass it over to you now.
Well, amen, amen, amen. I want to remind everybody, this is C4T Radio. This is our Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. And we've got a special guest, Rodney Lee Conover, running for California 08. And we want you to go to his website, give him some support. Everything's there that you need at the website, the Facebook, the Twitter, the place to donate if you can, at Conover for Congress. That's ConoverForCongress.com. And with that, you know, Rodney, you said some really important words, because anybody that's listened to me on Blog Talk Radio the last 3 years that I've been on Blog Talk Radio knows that I'm a huge advocate of hurdle jumping. Strength through adversity.
You know, it took Jimmy Carter and some horrendous gas lines to bring us Ronald Reagan. And I'm really excited to see what Barack Obama's going to bring us. Because, you know, next to Barack Obama, Jimmy Carter, you know, he was an honest man at least. I'm a lot more disappointed with him now than I was 20 years ago. I walked down a bad road. But let me tell you, he was an honest man, but he was a mess. And we got Ronald Reagan out of that. Out of Hillary's health care and Bill Clinton's first term of trying to run to the left, we got Newt Gingrich. We got a promise from a contract for America. We took over Congress. Strength to adversity. Sometimes we've got to go through the hard times. In fact, I tell my nieces all the time that the easy road is generally never the right road. If you jump over your hurdles, you're stronger on the other side. The bigger the hurdle, the stronger you are. And that applies to what you said about business a while ago, which is huge. You know, you've got a huge hurdle. You've got a huge hurdle, which is covering this California 08 district. It's huge. But you've been doing it. You've been going everywhere working on this campaign. I've known a lot of campaign candidates for Congress who thought that they could accomplish the task of winning from their office. And you know better than that. You've been going. You just got done with an awesome meeting yesterday with the Federation of Republican Women. They're in Ridgecrest. Great group. Give them a big old shout out. I've loved them for a long time. Some of the hardest working Republicans in the party is that Republican Women's Federation, and they're great. You've been up to Ridgecrest. You've been going all over the place. You've been doing different things. You've been going to different states to do things that you had to for your campaign, because you know that this is not an easy task. You know it's a hard task. You're on an uphill battle. Anytime you're facing an incumbent, it's an uphill battle. But you've got the optimism you can do it. You know that we have to do this because we've got candidates out there that are not voting what they need to be voting for, and we need to replace them if at all possible. And so, you know, I appreciate that. Ronnie, I want to turn it in a little bit of a direction, and I want to play a campaign trick on you. I want you to give me a real quick your elevator speeches for some of these main issues that you've got. You know, one of the reasons I really, really like you, beyond some character issues, is you know how to say it. You know how to put it in words. And there's issues. You're on top of the Second Amendment. You're on top of Common Core. You're on top of Obamacare. You're on top of abortion. You're on top of these issues. Give us your quick rundown of your elevator speeches, why you believe what you believe on these issues.
Okay. Do you want to give me one, or you want me to just pick them? What do you want me to do?
Just run down your list and hand us a few.
Well, let me start with Common Core. How about Common Core?
Common Core,
in a nutshell, Common Core may be the only thing that's more dangerous as an issue or as a piece of legislation or as a thing may be more dangerous than Obamacare. I call it Obamacore, as a matter of fact. Why is it more dangerous than Obamacare? Rodney Lee, you run around, you know, all of 2013 telling us how crazy and onerous and how it's not about health care, it's about getting your information and using it politically, much like the IRS uses your tax information politically like they did in 2012. How can Common Core be even more dangerous than Obamacare? Well, because Common Core is an infection aimed at your kids, and we're not talking about college kids. We're not talking about academia that is teaching college courses. We're talking about kids in junior high. We're talking about kids in high school. We're talking about kids in grade school. And at its core, not to make a pun or anything, but at its core, it's designed to disenfranchise children from their parents. Now, why does that sound so paranoid? Why does that sound so overreaching, that the statement that I just made? Because I meant it that way. I wasn't trying to shock you. I wasn't trying to beat around the bush. I said exactly what I meant just now. It is an attempt to disenfranchise you from your children. Its goal is to separate kids from what is normally the goal of education, which is always has been a local thing. Education has always been designed, implemented, and taught at the local level. Why? Because that's what works. Okay, it's nothing more complicated than that. In fact, something that I don't know if I wrote this or if I just absorbed it somewhere, but conservatism is really just the history of what works. Does that make sense, Scott? It's the history of what works. You know, conservatism is really just the trial and error of human experience. You go back to caveman times, and as humans evolved, you know, we try stuff. And what works, we go, huh, that worked. And we repeat it because we remember what worked. And that became conservatism. You conserve. And what works here isn't necessarily what works over there, and that's education. That's why education always has been local. That's why you have a PTA. That's why you have your local educators. That's why you have parents showing up and saying, what is going on here with little Johnny's syllabus? Now, along comes the Obama administration. And much like a lot of the Obama administration, they want a one-size-fits-all program. In this case, it's called Common Core. And as usual, it's dressed up in a nice bow that says, oh, look what we've done. We've designed a program that is so great because, look at it, it's designed, we're going to compete. Oh, that's it. We're going to compete with kids overseas, and we're going to beat them. We're going to be the best. And blah, 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 blah. Look, I don't care how you dress it up. They're attempting to create a one-size-fits-all curriculum to make all kids in America march in the same direction. And that direction leads right to the state. They want your kids to get their orders from the state. They want kids to learn that the answer is coming from the government, not from their parents. Now, if someone that knows nothing about Common Core and doesn't pay attention to politics and doesn't and just kind of lives their lives, hears me say that, I understand that they might naturally think, well, this guy's just a lunatic. He's a far-right extremist, and, you know, pick your poison, pick your words. And I'll be honest with you, Scott, 5 or 6 years ago, if I would have heard people talk like I'm talking now, I had the same reaction. But you know what? Things have changed. There are people that I owe apologies to, because I myself 5 or 6 years ago pulled people aside and said, you know what, you're kind of giving us Republicans a bad name when you talk like that. But folks, I am telling you, if you investigate, if you do a tertiary examination of research into Common Core, you will see it is blatant how they're selling it. I've written extensively about it, and it is not just a UFO examination of it. It's right there for anyone to see, and the way they are pushing Common Core into local curriculums is with money. It is with bribery. They are taking federal money and offering it to the states, or they have offered it. It's been implemented. This is a done deal in a lot of states. And they are giving it to the states, the cash-strapped states and local municipalities and school districts and cities, and saying, here's some money. use Common Core. Well, we all know what money does to people. And a lot of these states have implemented Common Core. Now, there's a giant pushback happening, and I'm very happy to see that states are suing to keep Common Core out of their states, out of their cities, out of their school districts, and local and teachers and parents are all over the country are up in arms. They are finding curriculums and materials and books. For instance, I think it was in South Dakota, there was a Common Core curriculum that was providing a couple of books to school grade school age children that had pornography in it. Well, I used to be a grade school boy. And if you give a grade school boy pornography, the hardest thing that you will have next is getting it away from him. And if you try to get that pornography away from him, you will find that you'll be in a battle between him and his parents. It's called corrupting youth. And that's what Common Core does. And I'm using the pornography example because it's the easiest one to understand. But there's other ways that Common Core is corrupting the youth. It's not as obvious as MTV and other parts of the media. But when you try to teach kids that there's only one way, and that testing, for instance, is not good, that grades are not good, that achievement is not the way you score people, that there are no winners and no losers, that everybody gets a trophy, that when you do a math test, it's how you feel about that math test, not if you got an answer right or wrong. When you create a curriculum where that is the core, if you will, you end up with kids that don't achieve. And when you end up with a country full of kids that don't achieve, you got a country ready to be led around by the nose. And that's what Common Core is. And if you don't believe me, that's okay, because that's healthy to not believe. But you better go look for yourself if you're not going to believe me. Did you ask me for a short answer? I hope not. There ain't a short answer.
It was a great
there ain't
answer.
A short, there's not a short answer, Scott.
There really isn't on that.
I guess the short answer is, if you don't believe me, please look for yourself whether you have kids or not. And if they're in grade school or junior high school and they're being taught with a Common Core curriculum, you better take a half day off work and get over there. Or you better ask your kid for his non-existent test scores, because the first thing that's going away with Common Core is testing. Because the first thing a socialist or communist nation does is they get rid of tests, because you cannot, in a socialist nation, you cannot have one child doing better than another. They must all be the same. And that's the key to Common Core. You will all be the same. It's dangerous, Scott.
It is dangerous. Let's hear what you have to say about the Second Amendment. That's a huge one right now, Rodney, because you know what? You just covered what they do in a socialist nation. And another thing is to take the guns away from the people.
Well, let me be clear, because I get in trouble on the Second Amendment, not for the reasons that most people get in trouble, not for the reasons Democrats get in trouble, not for the reasons that Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown gets in trouble. I get in trouble for other reasons, Scott Osborne, Dan Wilson, and it is this. I'm not a hunter. Am I a...
Me either.
I went to college at the University of Texas in Austin. I graduated. I lived for a time in the hill country of Texas, overlooking Mansfield Dam that was built by the company of Brown and Root, who built Subic Bay in Vietnam for LBJ, that financed the various campaigns of LBJ that most say caused the Vietnam War, or our involvement in it. And yet, I'm not a hunter. Am I a lifelong member of the NRA? Yes. Do I have a concealed carry permit? Well, no. I live in California. But let me be clear. The Second Amendment was not created for the purpose of hunting. All right? Let's make that clear. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting. It's got nothing to do with shotguns, Joe Biden. It's got nothing to do with sports. It's got nothing to do with target practice or the Olympics, killing animals. It's got nothing to do with it. Zero. The Second Amendment is there to protect your family and your property. End of story. Period. Let's not talk about anything else. Unless you want to talk about examples of the need to protect your family and your property. There are many, but they're all examples of your need to protect your family and your property. Let's think of some. A guy comes over and wants to steal your stuff. Second Amendment's there. How many bullets in your magazine do you need? Well, beats me. Well, some people say you only need 6 or 4. Joe Biden says you only need a shotgun. Oh, really? Because I saw on television a couple of teenagers from Chechnya in a street battle with the FBI, the ATF, local police, sheriff's office in Boston, and they fired off 2,000 rounds, dozens of professionals, and they couldn't stop two teenagers, two scared Chechenian teenagers in a foreign land. Somebody's breaking into my wife's house, and she's got 3 babies with her. You only want her to have 4 bullets, 6 bullets? She's got to reload or something? Yeah, okay. No. She should have all the firepower she needs to feel safe. Okay? She has the Second Amendment. Let's say we got a government that wants to take away your Fourth Amendment, your Tenth Amendment, your fill-in-the-blank amendment. Well, we got the Second Amendment. Bottom line, if somebody comes to you, anybody, with any argument for gun control, here's what you say. And please give Uncle Rodney credit for this. You tell him this. Whether you own a gun or not, whether you hunt or not, whether you care about guns or not, whether guns scare you, whether you despise the NRA, strongly for the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment is the only thing that stands between you and your other amendments. The Second Amendment protects your other amendments. If they take away the Second Amendment, they can get your other amendments. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it's the pattern. That's the thing, is it's the pattern.
And, you know, I'm not a hunter either, Rodney. My dad was a hunter and my grandfather was a hunter. And as a little kid, I was the hyper kid. And so I think they decided it was probably not a good idea to teach me how to use a gun until I became an adult, so I never did. And I would have a hard time shooting Bambi. I'm an animal lover, but I strongly support the rights of those that do. But, man, we got to be able to protect ourselves. And that's what this all comes down to. And, again, it falls into the same pattern as Obamacare and Common Core. The argument that they give you in order to provide the solution that they give you, they don't match up. Like you just said, you know, if you could find a bunch of criminals who would follow the law, then I would be all for saying, well, yeah, then maybe some gun control might work. But you're not going to find that. All you're going to do with any kind of gun control is take it away from the law-abiding citizens. There are 300 million guns in our country, and a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent of those guns are used in committing a crime. California, your state, used to be mine, has the most stringent Brady Bill gun laws in the country and has the worst record for crime with a gun. So it doesn't work. It flat out doesn't work. And all it does is take our way, our ability away, in order to take care of the people. Well, you know, you gave some great answers, Rodney, and we're getting up towards the end of the show, so we want
to
start.
I have to
wrap it up.
Do you mind if I say one other thing, Scott?
Oh, take it away.
There's something I've been thinking about for a long time, and I finally distilled it to the extent that I can distill anything. I distilled it down to something I've been talking about, and that is, because I've been coming up against this, why are you running against a Republican thing? And I've got a darn good answer, and it is this. Here's why you put Rodney Lee Conover in Congress. Because you cannot use logic like you just articulated, Scott. Of course, everything you said is right just now, of course, and it's logical. Of course criminals aren't going to follow gun laws. Oh, let's make more gun laws. Well, of course they don't. They're criminals. Duh. And of course gun laws don't work. Go to Chicago and Washington, D.C. and tell me gun laws work. Sorry, they don't work. But that's logic. Democrats do not care about legislation that's good for Americans and America. They don't care. It doesn't interest them. If it interested them, why would they pass legislation like Obamacare? Why would they pass immigration reform that legalizes illegal aliens? They don't care. I'm not talking about Democrats 30 years ago. I'm talking about current Democrat lawmakers, the Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid's of the world, and there's tons of them. They don't care, Scott. Stop trying to use logic and stop trying to convince Democrats based on the merits of legislation or ideas. Stop it. It is irrelevant. It's moot because they don't care. The way you convince the contemporary Democrat legislator, leader, and possible voter is not through the merit of an idea or the logic of an idea or because it's good for Americans or good for the country or the world. The way you do it is explain to them that if they don't get on board, it's going to be bad for them. They will personally suffer if they don't do this. That if they don't change their ways, they themselves are going to be thrown out on their butts or worse. They must be convinced politically because that's all they understand, Scott. They only understand that if they're personal demise isn't on the line, then they don't care. Isn't that obvious that they don't care? They pass Obamacare and then exempt themselves from it. They obviously don't care
about what's good for the country. Why would anyone do that unless they didn't give a rat's butt? So they must be dealt with on their own terms, which is pure politics. They must be persuaded politically. And Scott, it takes a dog. It takes a big dog. And
that's right.
Is me. That's me, Scott. I've been around them. I know how they think. They must be forced into political submission. They must be convinced that it is their butt that is on the line. And you don't do it with logic. And they don't listen to the merits of ideas and legislation. That's why you vote for me. That's why you go to my website and send me your money. That's right. Send me some money. Continue, please.
You're so true. That is so absolute true. And we can, again, look at everything. Most of those guys know the damage Common Core is going to do. And that's why we got to get out. We got to change minds and hearts of the. We've got to take care of some of these uneducated voters. We're living in a time when people come home from work and they don't even pay attention to the news. They sit down and watch the Disney Channel. They go to bed. They don't read a newspaper anymore. They don't know what's going on in this country. And I would say there's a good portion of your neighbors around you that if you said the word Benghazi, they would have no idea what it was about. But you're so true, Rodney. You cannot reason with these guys. They have got to understand that they are on their way out, and that's Democrats and Republicans. There's some Republicans that are exactly the same way. I'll tell you, interesting that Huckabee is thinking about running for president. And I hate to tell him this, but, boy, he's taken some positions. He won't get any grassroots support. Now, he may get the GOP establishment support, but he's not going to. And these guys have got to understand this. You know, Rodney, man, every time I talk to you, either personally on the phone or on Facebook or on one of our shows, I am impressed. And I'll tell you why I'm impressed. There's a scripture in Psalm, David's first Psalm, and in verse 3 it says, "He shall be like a tree planted by the water." And that's Rodney Conover. Rodney Conover is a tree planted by the water. He shall not be moved. I am firmly, firmly confident that 6 years from now, Rodney Conover is going to be saying the same thing. Rodney Conover is going to be doing the same thing. I firmly believe when Rodney Conover goes to Washington, D.C., and somebody comes in and tries to bribe him, he's going to stand like a tree planted by the water and say, "I don't think so. I don't think you're afraid of it. I you mentioned the dog. You need a good dog in the fight right there." And that's what it's. That is what it's going to take, and we need, I've been saying this, we need 435 Rodney Conovers in Congress on both sides. I don't have a problem with a Democrat. I got a big problem with a far left socialist, but there's some good Democrats in Congress who stand by what they believe in. I disagreed a lot with Bob Byrd, but you want to talk about a stalwart for standing up for what he believed in. And on both sides of the aisle, we've got people that will stand up for what they believe, and then we've got people that will just fall over at every little wind that blows. So I did what you said, send him some money. Anybody that's listened to me on Blog Talk Radio or read my post know that the raising money part is the part that I hate. So I don't talk about money unless I think it's important. And it takes money to run. I'm firmly confident, Rodney, that every dime that comes through your campaign would be used wisely, which oftentimes it is not. And I've also believed that you've got what it takes to run a campaign on a very slim budget, because I think your mind works that way. You're conservative that way. But it still takes money. It takes gasoline to get Rodney up and down the state of California, which he's got to go two-thirds of the state a length in order to get to the top of his district. It's going to take money. It's going to take help. Go to Rodney's website, conoverforcongress.com. Go to the Facebook. Go to the Twitter. If you're in the 8th district, or if you know somebody that's in the 8th district, contact Rodney through his website, contact Rodney through Facebook, through his email, and say, I'm willing to help on the ground. Or maybe you're John LaRosa in Boston, Massachusetts, and you can help on the ground, but you know somebody in the 8th District in California. Get on the phone. Say, listen to this guy. You can listen to him here on this archive from here on out, all the way through the election. It'll be an archive. Rodney was on last Wednesday night on Fair Tax Radio, and let me tell you, it was an awesome show. You can go find that link on my webpage. Tell them, go listen to this guy. Listen to this guy. Because, I just do. And I'm going to pass it to Dan, and we'll start our closing remarks there. You know, it's important. It's important that we get good men, good women in D.C. And like you said, Rodney, you know, congressmen are elected every 2 years. Those men, and we never fail to go to the summer of 1787, those 2 months in that little room in Philadelphia, where the greatest men, the founders of our country, sat down and said, we've got to make sure we make some protections for the people that are free. For many hundred years later, we want to make sure that we contain this freedom. So with that, Dan, I'll pass it to you for closing remarks, and then we'll pass it back to Rodney for closing remarks, and then I will go ahead and close out the show.
Well, I agree that this whole Common Core thing is a total mess, and that, you know, we need to attack this immediately and stop it, because we're going to be dumbing down our children to the point where within the next generation they aren't going to be able to do anything. And we can lose our nation. If you go to my home page, it says a great statement by Ronald Reagan. He said one generation. He said freedom can be lost in one generation, and how true it is. And if we don't get up and get everybody out there fighting for our cause, we can very well lose this nation. And that's why it's so very important for us to get out there, each and every one of us, wherever we go, to pass the word. I go down to the car wash, and I talk about this. I go out shopping. You know, you're in line. You talk about it. Wherever you come in contact with people, don't be afraid to mention politics. You aren't going to reach everybody, but if you reach 10% of them, that's all we need. And we can, you know, we can win back our nation, and we can set things straight. And people need to learn about our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and really understand them, because right now not many people do. And I agree with Rodney that this has been going on for some time, that even back in my day, it was starting, it was in the early stages, but they were starting to try to make the changes back in 64, 65, they were trying to get rid of the testing, and they were doing the first feelers out, and it didn't work, thank God. Now they're getting more success as people are becoming less involved in politics, and we need people to get back on the bandwagon and start understanding what our nation is all about and what our Constitution is all about. You know, we have the people on the left now trying to say, oh, the Constitution is outdated. No, actually telling you the truth, the Constitution is showing exactly why we need it. Here in right now in this day and age, because as Rodney said, this is, you know, our forefathers saw this happening. And, you know, we need to get the wrong people out of Congress and the right people in and stop voting on names and not paying that attention. And we need to get out there and get true patriots out there who understand what it is, you know? And, you know, that's the most important thing. What I keep on saying at the end of each show is get out there, get active, start going to your school board meetings, start going to your town hall meetings, and start learning and get out there and, you know, get active. This nation needs all of us to keep us in check, and one vote does count. And with that, I'll pass it over to Rodney, I guess, for his closing statements.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Scott, as always. My name is Rodney Lee Conover, and I am running for Congress in California. I'm running against a Republican incumbent, a pro-amnesty, first-term congressman who has voted twice to fully fund Obamacare. And indeed, Obamacare is fully funded. You're living with it. He is not living with it. Neither is his family, his staff's family, his friends, the White House, their friends, unions, Congress, Nancy Pelosi, and the list of cronies goes on. My opponent is the only Republican in California who refuses to sign the pledge not to raise taxes. His vote of yes for the Ryan Murray budget and the confirmation of the details of that budget on Wednesday of last week increases the federal deficit, cuts veterans' pensions. They exempted wounded veterans, but it leaves in place the cuts in pensions for the rest of veterans. And Dan and Scott, they are the only cuts in that budget. Did you know that? The rest are just reductions in growth. Did you realize that? The only real cuts in that budget are the veterans' pensions. They're the only true cuts.
Insane.
And this they did in favor of closing that loophole that gives illegal aliens access to federal welfare. All this in less than a year in office. It's disgraceful, and I mean to put an end to it. For a long time, you know, the job of a congressman was to go to Washington, raise a bunch of money, and extract a bunch of taxpayer money, bring it back to the district, and vote however they're told by the powers that be. But now a congressman's job, my job, will be to go there and stop it. Stop the theft of your children's future and fight for the values that I know you and I hold dear. And that goes double for stopping Obamacare, any form of amnesty, Common Core, and the irresponsible piling on of debt, which threatens everything. And it threatens your children's opportunity to participate in what we participated in. And I got all my dreams. I got every one of them. And your children should be able to at least have the opportunity to get their dreams and participate in the American dream that I got to participate in, because it was great. I can't imagine anything better. I can't. I can't even sit around and dream of a better dream. Why do you think millions and millions of people risk their lives to get here to America? Because Consistent and solid conservative Republican votes are desperately needed in Congress. And whether they come from California or Texas or anywhere else, each vote represents a vote for you. But I need your support. So while you're thinking about it, go to my website, www.conoverforcongress.com. I'm going to take down a rhino. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Amen. Amen. And I'll tell you, Rodney, when it all comes down to it, you just laid out the faith and foundation for why I work so hard, for why I put time in and I do, and why I support you. I support you for certain reasons, but the reason I support in the first place is my three beautiful nieces. You know, the oldest is not yet 12 yet, and they've got a long history ahead of them that they're building in this great country that we live in, and I want them to have the same freedoms that I had. I'm middle-aged. I hit 45 this year. That's halfway to 90. If I live as old as my grandfather did, I'm halfway through life. And I've got, like you, man, I've done everything that anybody ever wanted to do. I've been in business for myself. I got to work abroad down in the Caribbean in the beautiful islands of Trinidad and Grenada. I'm getting to, as a single man who has not married, getting the opportunity to be a parent, which is important to me. I'm active in my church. Everything that I could want in life, I've already had. Everything else is icing on the cake. But I want the future for my nieces be right. I want the future for my nieces in the judicial system. I want the future for my nieces in our political system, in our economic system. I want those things to be right for them so that they continue to have the freedoms, so that in 30 years they can be saying, you know, these people coming from these nations where there is no freedom, they're struggling to get in this country. They're swimming across shark-infested waters in order to get here. I want them to be able to say that. And that's why I want to thank you so much, Rodney, for coming on again. It's always great having you. Like I said, folks, you know, he's a good man. He's a good man. There's character issues. Rodney's solid on the issues. He's solid a conservative on the issues and has been a lifetime solid conservative. But that's not everything. The big piece is if they are solid in their core, in their stand, where they stand in the fight. Because we got a lot of people out there that are not. Bob Corker at one time was solid on the issues. He got to D.C. and now he's squishy. He follows the money. And we need people like Rodney. So I want to thank you, Dan. I want to thank you down there in Florida. We're having beautiful weather up here, Dan. Right now it's supposed to get up to 70 today. We'll see if we can beat you with the weather. We're having a great time. Rodney, I know in a few months you're going to be taking a trek out here to Texas for some things. And I look forward to that. I look forward to working with you each day. Again, folks, if you can help in the grassroots, online, and doing things from far away, please get in contact. If you're in the California 8th District, if you're on the ground and you can get out and beat the ground some in one way or another, do that. Please get in contact because we need to get Rodney Conover. We want Congressman Rodney Conover, and we're going to do it. It's an uphill battle. It's a battle against an incumbent. That's all right. I've never been afraid of an uphill battle. I think Rodney can do it. I think he can do it on his record. I think he can do it on his messaging. And I think he can do it on his character. So we want to thank everybody that was listening. We want to remind you that next Tuesday on our Parental Sovereignty Show, we've got another great candidate, another person that I've just grown to love. Dave Souza is running for a very small race. It's a Board of Supervisors race in El Dorado County. Herman Cain, when he left that Saturday, he said, go local, go local, go local, and I have. And I've been trying to help Dave as much as possible. He's a good man. He's a cowboy. He's a rancher. He's got great character. He's just a good, good guy. And we are looking forward to letting Dave be Dave Tuesday night on Parental Sovereignty Radio here at Contending for Truth Radio. That's at 7 o'clock California time, 9 o'clock Texas time, and 10 o'clock Florida time with Dan Wilson and Jennifer Montrose as well and Rodney Stanhope on that show. Yesterday, of course, we started back up ladies' Bible class. Loving that. Boy, we got into the part where King Saul meets King David, the soon-to-be King David. And as we've been doing for a long time, we're wandering through the Old Testament. Unfortunately, my ladies are out in California, and that's where all the goodies are. You know, they had donuts yesterday, and they couldn't shove them through the foam. But they sat around the table with me for a long time, for almost 5 years, as I taught that class. And we started broadcasting it here about a year ago on Blog Talk Radio. Well, now they're sitting in California listening on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm teaching the class here from Mesquite, Texas. So join us on Fridays, and that's 12:30 Texas time. That's 10:30 California time. Each Friday, we will continue to walk through the Old Testament looking for the portrait of Christ, his word, and the church in the Old Testament. Thursday nights on Contending for Truth Radio, very important subject. One I was going to broach to that today, and we didn't, but that's in judicial injustice. There's some crazy things also going on in our judicial system in this country. We were founded on a country where you're innocent until proven guilty, that we work really, really hard to make sure that law and order is done with truth. And in many cases, it's not. We've got Don Miller. He's not in prison anymore. He's out. We fought that fight. But the IRP6 still are. And I'm going to tell you, you want to talk about a horrendous story of the federal government coming in on the local level and getting involved in something that they never should have been involved in, and twisting and putting some men in jail that are totally innocent. You want to join us here on Contending for Truth Radio on Thursday nights, and that's at that's at 5 o'clock California time, 7 o'clock Texas time. And join Sam, Cliff, and Ethel. I'm going to tell you, Ethel is my sister from another mother. She is great, and they're hitting this hard, not only on the IRP6 story, but other cases also as well. So we want to make sure that you get a chance to join them. And they also have a show on Tuesday, right before Parental Sovereignty Radio, on Michael Smith. Here, my buddy in Texas, his Conservative Nation Radio. They do a show on Tuesdays on CNR Radio and Thursdays on C4T Radio. So we want to do that. And then one more show on Monday nights, Rodney Stanhope, California Politics. What's going on in California? Rodney, a good friend, one of our co-hosts on Tuesday, does that with his buddy, his liberal buddy, Brian. You'd think Hina Hannity and Combs was good. You should turn into Rodney and Brian. They do a great show. They have some great discussion. It's friendly, but it's heated at times, and you don't want to miss it. And Rodney's hitting out on some of the hard things. So those are the things going on Continue for Truth Radio. We look forward, Rodney, to having you on again. You know, you've got the bulk of my time over the next year until we get to November. We're going to make sure I can do everything I can do in order to get you into Congress. So we look forward to that as the year goes on. Look forward to seeing you on Facebook, talking to you on the phone, and going forward from there. Ladies and gentlemen, as we end the show, I am going to play with one of my favorite songs, Keep On Keeping On, D-Rock Country, a good friend and a sweet, sweet man, and some of the best lyrics ever. And this is my all-time favorite song, and I'm going to tell you, Keep On Keeping On, that's what we do. That's why we do what we do every week. That's why we do what we do every day. We keep on keeping on. Sometimes the road is long, but we keep on keeping on. Thank you for tuning in. And one more time, go to conoverforcongress.com and give Rodney some help.
Just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes down. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Yeah.
whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be.